Greetings and welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We continue our conversation with Dr. Daryl Charles on Just War. Your questions and comments ahead, and the conversation continues. We will be giving away his book called Between Pacifism and Jihad, Just War and Christian Tradition to the best callers and emailers during this hour. Our call-in number, 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org, 1-800-730-2727, or issuesetc@kfuo.org. Dr. Daryl Charles is Associate Professor of Religion and Ethics at Union University and author of that book, Between Pacifism and Jihad, Just War and Christian Tradition. Dr. Charles, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Let's go straight to RJ in Topeka, Kansas. RJ, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I just wanted to preface my question by just making an understanding that I'm a believer of God. But saying that is, I question everything except for him, and that includes our government. And like I said, I have issue to believe. I try to look at both sides of the story, and we talked earlier about honoring your government and your religion. And how does that play into the fact that the Iraqis and people of Muslim faith are doing just that? And they could probably point a finger at maybe the moral integrity and the direction that the United States might be going, and have issue with us trying to help them out, maybe.
All right, RJ, that's a good question. The way I'm understanding his question, Dr. Charles, is that, you know, we talk about just war generally from our perspective. We're American citizens. But the Islamists could say, look, we're just abiding by your criteria. And what we're doing is we see a just cause in the war that we wage against the West.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. That's a very good question. That's why the discussion necessarily needs to bring in the element of natural law thinking. It's proper to be critically asking questions with regard to the government. Political ethicist Gene Elstein calls the reader. Elstein teaches at the University of Chicago, just a sparkling Christian who's written a lot on civil society and just war. And she calls the Christian to live with a certain attached detachment. She speaks of our role as chastened patriots, and perhaps that's how I would respond to the caller's thoughtful question. That is to say, we need to be detached and sensitive to the temptation to nationalism, God and country sort of thinking. However, you know, we can fall into that temptation too, not just fanatical Islam. But in terms of discerning and intuiting basic justice, that's why natural law is so important, because the natural law, that is the sense within, Paul in Romans 1 and 2 speaks that, in the language of the law written in the heart. And all people intuit, regardless of their religious and ethnic background, intuit basic wrong and right. Aquinas argued that the basic, the most fundamental moral intuition is do good and eschew evil. All people have that basic awareness, that law written on the heart. That's the natural moral law, whether they're Islamic or whether they're Christian or whether they're non-religious. So all people are able, through right reason, to intuit basic wrong and right. That's why there could be Nuremberg trials at the end of World War II, simply because fundamental issues of justice are universal. So what is just everywhere at all times. It's not an Islamic issue. It's not a Western issue. It's not a South American issue. It's not a European issue. Justice is justice. And Aristotle argued that whatever is just everywhere at all times and in all places. So when there's a difference between perceived justice, say between Western and Islamic culture, one must resort then to basic fundamental moral reason. And that's the significance of the development of just war thinking, say, in Thomas Aquinas' day, because it was insurgent and emergent Islam which was forming the very background there. That's why the UN can supposedly institute sanctions, because supposedly justice has a uniform and universal character. It's not specific to Western or to Middle East culture.
RJ, hang on the line there. My producer will get with you, and we will send you a copy of Dr. Charles' new book, Tall Between Pacifism and Jihad, Just War Tradition, Just War and Christian Tradition. And thanks for the call, RJ. Up next from Austin, Texas, Humberto is on the line. Hello, Humberto.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
What's your question or comment for Dr. Charles?
I'd like to ask him about, I'm trying to discuss for the last 15, 20 years with my son, the reason why I didn't go to Vietnam. And he's a soldier working for Halliburton Security over there in Iraq now. And he's been a soldier for a number of years. He thinks I'm a coward for going to prison instead of going to Vietnam between 67 and 69. I try to tell him if I were to win and got killed, we wouldn't have this conversation. And he won't accept that. He still has his mind made up. I've been saved by Jesus Christ. I've been studying the Bible for the last 3 years, including apologetics in St. Augustine, discussing the wars that went on even when the Roman Empire was fallen. And I always see that the foot soldiers are the ones who held up all the empires, and the foot soldiers are the ones who died, and the foot soldiers were never the ones who were honored. They were always the politicians, the emperors, the pharaohs, the presidents, all the people on the top echelons, and it was never the foot soldier, but it's always the foot soldier who wanted the glory and the honor and defense of their country.
Humberto, thank you for the call. Let's deal with the issue, since Humberto calls in as a former conscientious objector, and at least according to his call, Dr. Charles, he was willing to go to prison rather than enlist or be drafted for Vietnam. Is there a place in the entire complex of just war theory and a scriptural view of warfare in general for the conscientious objector, the person who says, regardless of what their judgment on the war may be, I will not serve as a soldier?
Hmm. Well, my father was in precisely that category, as I noted in the first hour, and he served several years of alternative service in a veterans hospital, and I admire my dad very much for that. Now, the context today is very different because there's no conscription, there's no draft. So it's a little bit different today, but the just war position does not argue that all people should become soldiers. It does not require that all do military service. And we're fortunate enough that since there's no draft, it is voluntary. You know, and one can differ as a believer as to whether, I mean, believers differ over whether particular wars or skirmishes or hotspots or controversial geopolitical developments are just or unjust. I mean, there's room for disagreement there. But the question, you know, I cannot speak for Humberto and say why he did or did not. But I would simply say that one is, as a Christian, one can legitimately have Christian faith and serve as a soldier. Lutherans are well aware of Luther's treatise, mm-hmm. Why Soldiers Too Can Be Saved. And the reason he was, Luther was not a crusader by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, he was caught between the rhetoric of kings who were pompous and constantly stepping over the boundaries in terms of power, and he was dealing with emergent and resurgent Islam on the other hand. But at least he wanted to address the Christian community and say Christians can, in fact, be magistrates, they can be princes, they can be leaders, and they can be soldiers, and they can do that in good faith. But Luther's position was not that they necessarily had to go on this crusade or that crusade or enter into this war or that war. Now, in our cultural context, it's voluntary, so that should not be a problem today for Humberto, even though his son calls his Christian faith into question. But the question I would ask my students and Humberto and others is this. Are we agreed that someone must serve? Are we agreed that someone should protect? Are we agreed that we should have a police force in our neighborhood, in our city, in our state, or an extended police force to guard the nation? And so I think there's room for disagreement and for us to take our places in terms of vigilant Christians. So not everyone is called. And I think there's room at the private level to be a pacifist. But I would disagree with the pacifists who say, therefore, pacifism should be the public policy of the government. There is really no scriptural support for that. And in historic Christian tradition, there's no basis for that. So I think there's disagreement at the private level, but when we read our New Testaments and we're wrestling with a policy, then I think it's a different matter.
Folks, we got some open phone lines for your calls, your questions, and your comments on Just War for Dr. Daryl Charles, our guest for this evening. 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727, or access our email address. We get it right here in the studio, your questions and comments, issuesetc@kfuo.org, issuesetc@kfuo.org.
What's the relationship between a novel written by a Revolutionary War veteran and the Book of Mormon? Who was Solomon Spaulding, and did he have a connection with Joseph Smith? Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September is titled, Who Really Wrote the Book of Mormon? You can find out more about this investigative history resource at our website, issuesetc.org. Who Really Wrote the Book of Mormon is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. Who Really Wrote the Book of Mormon cost $16.99 plus shipping and handling. Was the Book of Mormon given to Joseph Smith by an angel or created from a work of fiction? Find out with the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September. Who Really Wrote the Book of Mormon? 1-800-325-3040. Or issuesetc.org. The title of the book again, Who Really Wrote the Book of Mormon?
A voice in the wilderness of American evangelicalism. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you enjoy listening to Issues Etc. on the weekends, did you know that you can listen to 12 new hours of Issues Etc. each week on the Internet? All you have to do is go to our website, issuesetc.org, click the worldwide KFUO logo, and there you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7, including 12 new programs weekly. The website address again, issuesetc.org.
How would you like to meet Issues Etc. regular guests Wesley Smith, Beverly Yonke, Gene Edward Veith, James Lamb, Bob Weiss, David Menton, and Nathan Jastrom all in one day? Well, they'll be speaking at the Image of God Bioethics Conference Friday, November the 11th at the Sheraton Westport Lakeside Chalet in St. Louis. For more information, go to our website, issuesetc.org, and join us as we broadcast live from the Image of God Bioethics Conference November the 11th in St. Louis. Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about Just War. Our guest, Dr. Daryl Charles, is Associate Professor of Religion and Ethics at Union University and author of the new book titled Between Pacifism and Jihad, Just War and Christian Tradition. You can read an excerpt from this book, Between Pacifism and Jihad, on our website, issuesetc.org. It's under the What's New section. You'll find that excerpt and other resources on the subject of Just War, issuesetc.org. Our call-in number, 1-800-730-2727. Matthew calls from St. Louis. Matthew, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hello. Hi. Yeah, thanks, Todd Wilkin. Great program. Excellent guests. Just wanted to say that I'm less convinced that your guest tonight is a Christian, and more so probably on the payroll of our government trying to promote this war in Iraq without mentioning or refusing to mention the U.N. sanctions against Israel. You simply gloss over that and don't even talk about Israel. And I would imagine in your way of thinking, Israel commits no wrongs, and the wrongs that Israel commits are forgiven. And the sanctions, we should not enforce sanctions there, but because Iraq had sanctions against it, we needed to enforce that. Because Saddam Hussein did bad things to people, we needed to go over there. Because Israel does things to people, that's different. And also, I would imagine that were this back in, say, the 50s or the 60s with the problem of communism being more at our doorstep, our guest would probably believe that McCarthyism was a good thing, that anything that was pro-government, because our government is still founded in Christianity as it should be, then that's the way to go regardless who suffers. And I think that that ethical and philosophical thought, no matter what kind of learnedness backs it up, no matter what kind of trickery and speak one speaks with. You can't take away that the Bible says we are called to follow in the footsteps of Jesus, not follow in the footsteps of Caesar, not follow in the footsteps of our magistrates. And if he were alive during World War II, I guess in Germany, he would say, Hitler's our magistrate, we should follow him. Oh, but wait, we have to look at the natural law and order of things. And that's just wrong. He's saying
Matthew, let's give Dr. Charles a chance to respond, because you have assumed a great many things about what he might believe or what he might do in certain circumstances, none of which he has actually said yet. So let's see what he has to say. Where do you begin, Dr. Charles?
Well, that was a mouthful. Perhaps he could summarize it with one question. I heard that to be a statement rather than a question.
Well, it sounds as though he takes issue with the thing we talked about initially with the Iraqi war. You had mentioned that there were 17 U.S. sanctions against Iraq that were unresponded to or broken. And he's wondering about whether or not the U.S. sanctions against Israel for certain actions should also be taken into account.
Well, I'm unaware of sanctions that were imposed by the U.N. with regard to weapons of mass destruction that were threatening the Middle East. You know, so I'm not sure we're comparing, you know, apples with apples. Perhaps, you know, he could go into specifics about what the U.N. is sanctioning that's on the, you know, on par with that.
How do you respond in general, then, Dr. Charles, to those who hear this as, and this is how Matthew is characterizing it, as, well, look, the magistrate must be right, and since he's the magistrate, we just simply toe the line.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can imagine how Paul's epistle to the Romans would have struck the average Roman Christian. There was probably a homosexual schizophrenic maniac sitting on the imperial throne when he's writing that that the office of the magistrate has been ordained by God. That is not a call to be uncritical before the magistrate. I grew up in a Mennonite home. The Mennonites are Anabaptists, and of course their history is one of persecution and absolute separation from society and from the magistrate, because of the persecution was coming from the side of both Catholics and Protestants. So I think I understand a little bit about that, having grown up in a separatist home. But the call of the just war tradition is not to be uncritical toward the magistrate, but rather to renounce the absolutism of either the militarist, which would be crusade or jihadist, or the realpolitik position, that is the mindset that eschews moral reasoning altogether on the one hand, and to eschew ideological pacifism, which would say never can force be used for just purposes. And so the listener simply wasn't hearing the argument, at least over the last hour, because the just war position wrestles with the, you know, the dirty business of doing justice. That is, what is just? When could it be? And why or why not, and by what standard? Our police authorities do that all the time. That's what the criminal justice system, at least in theory, is based upon. It does not accept it. It does not acquiesce passively to crime, but neither do we sanction police brutality. Rather, the answer lies in wrestling with and discerning when does police involvement need to be incorporated. And that's by force. That is by force. And it's interesting that even pacifists assume that society should be guarded and protected in order that their goods might be preserved. So we want to eschew both absolute positions and argue that in the middle there we have to wrestle with justice. When might force be, force is not always necessary, but when might the authorities need to use that, at least in the context of criminal justice, and then by what measure?
So that you might respond, Dr. Charles, to some of the assumptions that Matthew had made there, what would you do, or what would you counsel being done living in Germany during the regime of the Third Reich?
Yeah. Well, I'm married to a German my wife is German, and I married into a German family, so I have great interest. My father-in-law worked for 5 years during the World War II in Poland, and he worked for the railroad. My father-in-law was a railroad switcher. So I am not naive as to what he – no one knows really what he knew and what he didn't know, but one cannot be so naive as to think that he knew nothing. So I am sensitized to those issues. Anyone who has read Dietrich Bonhoeffer knows the struggle that many confessing Christians needed to endure. And, of course, Karl Barth, to his credit, his position as one of the authors of the Barman Declaration shows that he and others were, to their credit, calling the church to resist the authorities. Now, any Jew, Todd, who was liberated by the Allied powers would acknowledge that, yes, there are times when force is, in fact, legitimate. So we don't need simply to acquiesce to totalitarian or militaristic tendencies. We have to resist political and social evil when it manifests itself. And so I think that the historical record bears out that force can be used. That's not to say that force is always necessary, but I think the historical record bears out, and certainly the mainstream of the historic Christian tradition affirms that, that there can be and there are times when force can be a moral entity. Now, how that force is applied, there's plenty of room for disagreement there, but the purpose of the book was to deal with the two absolutist positions that either say that force can never be a moral entity or that it always must be. I think the just war tradition requires moral discernment and is the one that's found in the center. And that's where I think that Christians need to be.
Dr. Daryl Charles is our guest. He's professor of religion and ethics at Union University. He's authored the book Between Pacifism and Jihad, Just War and Christian Tradition. Our conversation continues on the other side of this break. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org, issuesetc@kfuo.org, and our call-in number 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. Some of the subjects we'll take up on the other side of the break. The Crusades, of course, always come up in the discussion. Of course, we are talking about past history, but the discussion of just war there, especially because they were wars in many ways sanctioned by not only state but also church. We'll also talk about violence in the Old Testament, that it seemed to be a general theme of warfare in the Old Testament. Some would see there a Christian jihadism. We'll also return to the subject of terrorism in particular. What do you do with all the criteria of just war when your enemy either does not recognize them in any shape, matter, or form, or your enemy simply is impossible to find? 1-800-730-2727. Here's Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Will Wheaton, on why you should support LCMS World Relief.
LCMS World Relief is so important because it gives flesh to the love that Christ commands us to have. I'm reminded of the words from 1 John, where the apostle wrote, "Little children, let us not love with word or tongue, but in deed and in truth." And when you support LCMS World Relief, that is precisely what you're doing. You're loving in deed and in truth. You're providing food for the hungry and shelter for the homeless and clothing for the naked. It's a way that the love of Christ is actually incarnate and touches these people's lives, and it's just a wonderful thing.
For more information about LCMS World Relief, look for their logo at our website, issuesetc.org. Or call them, area code 314-996-1683, 314-996-1683, LCMS World Relief.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Todd Wilkin here again, talking with Maggie Carner, Executive Director of LCMS Life Ministries, about the upcoming Image of God Bioethics Conference here in St. Louis, November the 11th. Maggie, is bioethics a subject for ethicists and scientists only?
First of all, the term bioethics sounds sort of scary to the average person, and people feel sort of intimidated by that. But what we're talking about here, the actual noun bioethics, means where we're dealing with the implications of what's going on in medicine and science and scientific research and how that applies to the average person. And everyone needs to have be aware of what's going on culturally in this field today, especially clergy, and scientists, of course, and medical professionals, and even right down to the folks sitting in our pews on Sundays.
So why the title Image of God Bioethics Conference?
We chose that title specifically because as Christians, we have always had a good understanding of what it means to be children of God, created for a special purpose and a special reason. And God has given us his image, and it talks about that clear back in Genesis. And so that idea, traditionally our culture has always dealt with science and medicine with that idea in the back of their mind, that framework for understanding that the human, the Homo sapiens, are designed by God for a special purpose. And today that is getting muddied in the discussion, that concept and that understanding.
Finally, Maggie, tell us a little bit about some of the speakers that will be featured at the Image of God Bioethics Conference in November.
We've got some great speakers that are going to be there. We've got Gilbert Mailander, who is on President Bush's Bioethics Council in Washington, D.C. He also serves as a professor at Valparaiso. We've got Nigel Cameron, who he's testified before the United Nations about cloning. We've got Wesley Smith, who is a prolific author and lawyer who specializes in end-of-life issues, and he's been a frequent guest on Nightline and Good Morning America and some of the other, you know, popular shows on television. And all three of these keynote speakers are really dynamic speakers in their field.
For more information about the Image of God Bioethics Conference here in St. Louis, Friday, November the 11th, go to our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. We're talking about just war here on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Daryl Charles is our guest. Our call-in number, 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. We're continuing to give away Dr. Charles' book called Between Pacifism and Jihad, Just War and Christian Tradition, free to the best callers and best emailers during this hour, 1-800-730-2727, our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Here's an email from Joe. He writes from Gainesville, Georgia, with several questions, Dr. Charles. First, he writes, if a foreign country abuses and persecutes its citizens, but does not pose a threat to or has not invaded or attacked, etc., the U.S., for example, would the U.S. be justified in initiating a war for the sake of the foreign citizens without an act of aggression from the foreign country's government, where the persecution would be isolated to within that country's boundaries, Dr. Charles?
Does the person sending the email have Sudan or China or North Vietnam in mind?
Well, the only other thing that they write in that connection is, let's see, would the U.S. action there, if there were action, he writes, be a just war or an aggression? In other words, is a country justified for interfering, he puts that in quotes, with a foreign country solely to help that country's populace? And he says, I am not referring to the U.S. and Iraq, but rather to various other examples throughout world history.
Right. Yeah, I think there one would have to deal with each on a case-by-case basis. And that's why political prudence is so important. I mean, that's why we have to work through the U.N. as best and as much as we can. Just war thinking, evaluate, it's not a precise moral calculus. And while the guidelines are there, they require political and moral prudence in their application. So, for example, when the question is raised, well, the U.S. can't police the world. What about the eight hotspots that are out there? Should we be policing all eight? You know, sometimes that question is asked sincerely, sometimes not. Sometimes it's used as a smokescreen because the person believes that we have no business trying to interfere or to maintain justice anywhere. And so if the person is basically arguing that we should be isolationist, then there's nothing that one could say to argue. But if we have to discriminate, and that's what foreign policy is about, and that's what the just war tradition does, it discriminates, it evaluates particular human rights violations or scenarios that that require preemptive action or intervention. You know, it depends on the particular, it depends on whether something, the situation has reached critical mass. So it's hard to say, given the fact that he doesn't cite a specific scenario. My own personal opinion about, say, Sudan, and I include this discussion of this in the chapter on terrorism, is that since a number of nations throughout the world, and particularly in not just the Middle East, but in Africa and Southeast Asia, are experiencing the ferment of fanatical Islam, the Christian community and people in general are experiencing egregious human rights violations. And so, yes, I think then there comes a point at which a free nation, which is concerned about basic issues of justice and liberty, is going to have to decide, have things reached a critical mass? I mean, I think that we have to work through the UN as much as we can, but if the UN does not respond to egregious human rights violations that are mass violations, then it seems to me our foreign policy has to be directed and addressing that. Now, I don't think that military intervention is the only means of addressing human rights violations. It seems to me there's a lot that diplomacy and economic sanctions can do along the way, too. So military intervention is only the last resort.
The second question that Joe poses in his email is short and to the point, and really a really interesting question. Was the American Revolution a just war, or was it a civil rebellion in violation of Romans chapter 13?
Hmm. Not being a student of American history, I cannot say authoritatively, but it seems to me that there was, at least in the charter documents of the framers and founders, there was a desire to acknowledge the God is sovereign, and to acknowledge nature and nature's God. One has to understand the American Revolution, I think, against the backdrop of the European experiment. And what was it that they were reacting against? What was it that they were rebelling against?
Did they seem to be aware, the Revolutionary Fathers, at least implicitly,
yeah,
of the just war criteria, that they were, yeah, to some degree, going to subject themselves to these criteria before they rebelled against the crown?
Sure. I think one, you know, a fair reading of history would bear that out, that yes, they were aware of that. I'm not sure whether that fits nicely into the history of just war tradition, at least within the Christian moral tradition. But I think, as you pointed out, Todd, they were aware of basic principles upon which they wanted to construct their idea of freedom. And of course, it was we then that had to defend that. We were not attacking in order to liberate, but rather we were defending an idea of freedom and rights.
Joe, give us, if you would, email us your mailing address, because I'd like to send you a copy of Dr. Charles' book, Between Pacifism and Jihad, Just War and Christian Tradition. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org, and we'll be happy to send that out to you, Joe. This is from Daniel in Kansas City. He writes, the fifth commandment, that is, thou shalt not kill, is the most obvious focus of any discussion on just war, and a distinction is made between justified wartime killing and the murder of an innocent person. One could imagine scenarios in which it might be necessary for soldiers or intelligence agents to break other commandments by lying, stealing, and even committing adultery in order to achieve their objective. Is this ever deemed acceptable? Kind of here in the broader context of just war, and what is right in war?
Hmm.
Dr. Charles.
Well, that question probably should be posed to Jews or descendants of Jews who had to hide, had to lie, had to steal, had to do other things short of killing in order to protect their own. It seems to me that thou shalt not kill is clear in the sense that thou shalt not take innocent life. That is not a flat prescription against the taking of life, because other parts of Scripture bear out that, in fact, life, physical life is not the ultimate. And so therefore, one can, people who are guilty, who are deemed guilty, who are found to be guilty, can sacrifice their lives because of a lack of innocence. So the question that was raised earlier before the break on whether in a wartime scenario we can guarantee that no innocent life will be sacrificed. If the person is asking that question, the just war tradition does not proceed with the guarantee that no lives will be lost. It only proceeds that out of respect for innocent life, non-combatants are not targeted. Otherwise, guilty can use innocence as hostage, as Iraq did, but as others have done. And I think that's going to be an increasing scenario that we're finding as we're dealing with international terrorists. So the question, and I think this is a basic law enforcement question too. We simply do not allow thugs, we don't allow the mob, we don't allow criminals, we don't allow terrorists simply to take innocents and use them as hostage and do nothing about them. There is in my view, there is a fundamental moral weakness in the Western mindset. We're unwilling to make moral discriminations, and so that paralyzes us. Then when we need to make difficult decisions and go in and discriminate and deal with a problem. If there is a hostage, say, in our city, a situation of hostages being taken, it seems to me the law enforcement authorities and officers are going to have to wrestle with how we go in. They're not going to guarantee that there will be no innocent life in order to stop the greater evil, but they will do everything within their power to try to limit that in order to deal with the severity of the evil.
Is part of that moral discrimination, with only a minute here, Dr. Charles, a recognition that in these scenarios there will be often a choice between a lesser of two evils? I think about Corrie ten Boom,
sure,
professing Christian.
Sure.
She lies routinely to the Nazis. She does it knowing that she is doing a wrong, but she is choosing the lesser of two evils. And she confesses her wrong as a sin, but she says, I have to choose the lesser of these two evils to save the lives of these Jews in hiding.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And I think that's why her illustration is so... and, of course, she's emblematic of many who were forced into the very same situation. I would disagree, though. I don't think that her lying and that her hiding the identity of people who needed to be saved constitutes a sin or constitutes lying per se. It rather is simply trying to protect innocent life.
When we come back from this break, we're going to continue our conversation for another 10 minutes with Dr. Daryl Charles on Just War. We need to get to the question of the Crusades and, of course, of terrorism. What is that tipping point? And, of course, this is a diplomatic question, as it always will be. What is that tipping point as you look out into a world? Well, now we know instantaneously what is going on in countries where people, I think about North Korea, it's a gulag nation. The entire country, for all intents and purposes, is a prison camp. And we look at a country like this and we say, well, it doesn't pose a threat. But what do we do about the people therein who are suffering terribly generation after generation at the hands of unfit and bad government? Well, this is a question that begins to press us toward just war. Where do people intervene? Where do we seek not only for peace, but also for the well-being of those who are not in our borders? Our call-in number, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Dr. Daryl Charles is Associate Professor of Religion and Ethics at Union University. Pastor Mark Schaefer, coordinator of continuing education and related events at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, on the importance of equipping the priesthood of all believers.
It's so important that, the church, we have faithful pastors, but we also have faithful laypersons. The church can't exist without people. And the more that our laypeople understand their role and how they fit in the church, it's good for the church's mission. It's good for the church's service. It's good for the worship life of the church, too.
For more information about the fall retreats at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, a lay leadership retreat, an Enter the Bible World retreat, a Luther Hostel retreat, and a confirmation retreat, Contact Concordia Theological Seminary toll-free 1-877-287-4338 or visit them online at www.ctsfw.edu.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Reformation Sunday of this year marks the 10th anniversary of the weekly syndicated edition of Issues, Etc. We debuted with 5 affiliates. We currently have almost 100 affiliates, listeners on digital satellite radio, and a worldwide listening audience on the Internet. Thanks be to God and Jesus Christ, and thank you for listening and for your prayers and financial support. We're especially thankful for a small, loyal group of monthly supporters, our Issues Etc. Reformation Club. To find out the benefits of becoming an Issues Etc. confessor, apologist, or reformer, premiums like monthly tapes, books, and transcripts, visit our website, issuesetc.org, and look for the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses. Help us reach our goal of 200 Reformation Club members by Reformation Sunday, October the 30th. issuesetc.org. Issues Etc., the radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. (1-800-737-0172) is the phone number for our resource line. You can use that number to request a free complimentary copy of our next Issues Etc. journal, or you can help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a tax-deductible credit card gift, 1-800-737-0172. No gift is too small, or you can write us at Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117, Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Dr. Charles, let's turn to the issue of terrorism. We've touched on it just a little bit before in our conversation, but I want to deal with it in a longer way, and that is maybe the biggest problem here is that from the end of a country who is the target of terrorism, they're looking at all these questions and they're saying, look, we have a proper authority from our end, we have a just cause from our end, but our enemy, this isn't nation against nation, this is nation against what? We don't know what it is nation against, and it seems to put a different wrinkle in the whole just war question. Can you sort that out or iron that out for us in any real sense?
No. But let me say this. Very often that objection is raised, Todd, and I mean it's certainly a legitimate question. What about subnational or supranational entities? Can we? Should we? We're not the first to wrestle with terrorism. While terrorism takes on a new form, perhaps through resurgent Islam, it's not a new phenomenon at all. I alluded earlier in the hour to Thomas Aquinas and the social factors with which he struggled. It was the fear of chaos and disorder in his day that helped shape the contours of his own just war thinking. And for that reason, he enunciated among the three three criteria, just cause, right intent, and legitimate authority for going to war. It's interesting that it was legitimate authority that had prime of place for him. It was pronounced for him, but for a reason. Why? The fear of chaos, the fear of disorder, and there was a very common banditry, widespread banditry, vandalism, marauding, and private warfare in his day. One could call that terrorism. Now, that terrorism in our day is subnational or supranational, and the fact that terrorists have been successful in creating the perception among developed nations that they're quote-unquote marginalized peoples and quote-unquote victims have caused many today to ask, well, gee, if just war thinking, I mean, is it really valid? Can it be applied? And I think that there's something timeless, not only in the wisdom of Thomas, but in mainstream just war thinkers. It's precisely those criteria that undergird the just war position that address head-on, Todd, the very elements in terrorism that are so repulsive and morally abominable. For example, calculated murder of innocents and non-combatants, unjust cause and means, aims that are bent on destroying the greater good. Illicit intent and disproportionate means. I'm struck as we're talking. I'm struck by the how we derive terror. Our word terror comes from the Latin terrere, which means literally to cause to tremble. There is something profound psychologically that is at work in the phenomenon of terrorism. I recommend to my students and to others a book by Christopher Harman titled Terrorism Today, published in the year 2000. Al Harman vocationally does intelligence work in the realm of terrorism. He defines terrorism this way. I like to keep this definition handy. He describes it as the deliberate, systematic murder, maiming, or menacing of the innocent to inspire fear for political ends. So something profoundly psychological is at work, and I think he captures it well with his definition.
So far from rendering just war, its theory, its ideas, and its criteria obsolete, the reality of terrorism past and present really draws those distinctions, those moral distinctions, and their necessity into much higher relief.
Yes, very well said. I think that's in fact the case. And I see the problem of terrorism as forcing us not only to make moral judgments. In Western culture, we refuse to do that. I mean, we are morally obtuse. We're in a drunken stupor, so to speak. But I think terrorism is thrusting the need to make moral judgments in our face. And, you know, I continually resort to the criminal justice analogy here. Should we tolerate the mob? The mob is not a nation. The mob is not an ethnic entity. Should we tolerate organized crime? Well, probably none of our listeners, including the one who was so concerned about Zionist wars and, you know, our lack of being a watchdog over Israel, I'm sure no one would argue that, well, we should just allow organized crime to go on unimpeded. Society need not passively tolerate heinous crime on the one hand or discriminate, you know, indiscriminate police brutality on the other. And what applies to the organized crime, what applies to the mob seems to me can apply also to terrorists. In the same way, terrorism shares much in common with domestic criminality and mob criminality, even though I would say it's on a more elaborate transnational scale. And so we neither succumb to passive acceptance of terrorism out of, and we hear it all the time, out of a fear that this will our response will embolden terrorists to do even worse. I mean, imagine if we took the same policy and applied it to the mob. Well, we just won't do anything because of their reaction. Nor do we resort to wildly indiscriminate scorched earth militarism. Rather, we look for the middle, and that is criminal justice implemented.
How do you respond to someone who says, look, it's all fine and good to talk about just war theory, but these things have their roots in Christian thought, and Christianity lacks credibility on the subject of war because of that black mark in Christian history, the Crusades?
Well, when Thomas Aquinas in the 13th century was writing on war, asking the question, is war ever justifiable? That's question 40 in his Summa, by the way. The Crusades were passed, but he was writing it against the backdrop of common misperceptions about war. Is war ever justified, he asked. That's generic. Aquinas came, by the way, from a family of nobility. His brothers were knights. Knights are rapacious, he lamented in a sermon, a well-known sermon. And so we cannot call Thomas Aquinas a crusader. But he answered the question, is war ever justifiable on the basis of the criteria that were developed, right intention, just cause, and legitimate authority.
One minute here, please.
Sure. Just war theorists in the Christian tradition have never sanctioned the crusade or the holy war mindset. Aquinas, Luther, Suarez, and Vitoria, who were Spanish just war theorists in the 16th and late 16th century, are in a time of emergent or resurgent Islam. So just war theorists have never sanctioned any sort of crusading whatsoever. That is a religious justification for war. And I need to say, I want to emphasize here, Suarez and Vitoria, by the way, they lived at the time of the Spanish Inquisition and the Spanish conquest of the New World. And they were writing, and they took a very unpopular tech at that time, and they said, no, we cannot go in the New World and take property from the Indians and force them to convert. Rather, they have rights, generic rights, rooted in natural law. That's the answer to the question that you pose. It is not based on religion, per se, or only on our knowledge of the Bible, but rather intuited universal moral absolutes that help us discern what basic justice, basic good, and basic evil are. And those are intuited by all people, not just Christians.
Dr. Darrell Charles is Associate Professor of Religion and Ethics at Union University and author of the new book titled Between Pacifism and Jihad, Just War and Christian Tradition. Dr. Charles, it's been a pleasure talking to you again. Thank you for being our guest.
Oh, you're very welcome.
These are pressing questions, of course, and perennial questions. They are sometimes matters left to the conscience of our magistrates or our diplomats, but they are never far from the conscience of the Christian. Do we delight in war? No, we are never permitted on the basis of God's word to do such a thing. To support war? Yes, when just. To oppose war when unjust? Yes, of course. The whole notion presupposes that the state is not God, that the state, although it does bear the sword and bears that sword to just ends, has been given that sword by one greater, and that is the one who institutes all civil government, all governing authorities, all magistrates, all authority, period, and that is God. Standing over all of human history and looking down upon it, like a tapestry, is this God who has given the nations and governing authorities the sword to bear. Why? Not in vain, not only for the punishing of evildoers and the reward of those who do good, but for a greater purpose to which civil governments have no real concern, but the church does. And that is that the gospel might have free course and might be preached to the joy and edification of God's people and the salvation of souls. That gospel of Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace, the one who is the bringer of genuine peace between God and man. Human governments will pass away, but that message of peace in Jesus Christ will not. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen each week to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues, Etc., please visit the audio archive section at kfuo.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of Worldwide KFUO. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.